finish this lesson up, if it's not tonight, next Lord's Day, or next Lord's Day evening, Lord willing. Just have a few outlines left, and if you'd like to look on with one or keep it, you're very welcome to it. If you don't have yours with you, or you can just listen as I go through the notes. But like I know we've been doing Hebrew lettuce for several Lord's Day evenings, but there's some value in each of the lettuce verses that the Hebrew writer uses or has reference to, especially since it's talking about let us. So there's some value in looking at what we as a congregation need to do and we as individuals. Let us. So look at our me personally and then me as a member of the congregation here. Going back to even point number one, just to highlight just a couple things. When he mentions, let us therefore fear, lest the promise being left of us entering into his rest, and any of you should seem to come short of it. I dwelt on this point. I just think it's so important to kind of say it every so often. Heaven will surely be worth it all. No matter the struggles, the troubles, the toil and strife, heaven will be worth it all. And that's what he's saying. Let us not come short of it. And just press that point. One of the other ones was one we covered last week, number 8, in Hebrews 10, verse 24. Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. And again, the emphasis is there's no such thing as hermit Christianity. You cannot live Christianity in isolation. Some people think they can, and they think that's acceptable to God. But no, it's let us consider one another, provoke one another to love and good works, not forsake the assembly, exhort one another, and so much the more. There's a powerful message of encouragement in every phrase. And so I just kind of put in your notes, never minimize assembly. If I can impress something on brethren, and even on me too, the value of assembly, of getting together, let us not forsake the assembly. And that brings us to where we are tonight in the lesson, point number 9. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, wherefore seeing... No, I did that one last week. I remember talking about all the people in the congregation. For those that will pass down. Number 10. Still chapter 12, verse 1, point number 10 in the notes. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us. And that was based, or that phrase is based upon those who have gone before us. Look at their faith. Imitate their faith. They provide the example for our race. So let's run the race with patience. Let's run the race. Think of a race. It's not a saunter. A stroll. It's not just a ho-hum motion or walk, but rather it's a run with purpose and direction. You run a race. And Christianity is not necessarily a sprint. We hear people all the time in every generation say it's a marathon. We're in it for the long haul. It's lifelong. You know, it's similar to getting an education. You can't do that in a single bound. Or like growing a tree. Or building a house. Or raising children. Something that's not attained in a single bound or a weekend seminar. It's something that's not achieved and then laid aside. We're in a let us run the race. Run the race. I heard some of you years and years ago, some things in life just can't be hurried. Some things just can't hurry up. I heard the illustration of a vacuum cleaner. You can't can't hurry a vacuum cleaner. You go over too fast, it doesn't pick it up. There's a certain speed that maxes its efficiency. Somebody just can't hurry. The same thing with Christian living. We can't just accomplish it all in a week and a half or several years. We're in it lifelong. It's a course. It requires patience in the next phrase. And it includes a predetermined track and a finish. We're in it till we die or till Jesus comes again, whichever happens first. So then we need to run that race with patience. And when you think of patience is not just merely sitting down and waiting for something to happen. Now it can be. Sometimes we have to do that, but really it's just endurance. Another word for it. Or persistence. Or perseverance. It includes the ability to finish what we've begun. So we run a race with the expectation we're going to finish. I don't know if anybody enters a race and thinking, well, I'm going to drop out real quick. I'm going to pay the price, get the entry, go get my number, get all the identifications, but you know, I'm going to enter this race with the idea that I don't even want to finish on mine. We run the race with patience. Number 11, in chapter 12, beginning of verses 28 and 29. Number 11 in your notes, the next time the word let us appears. Wherefore, we receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken or moved, some translation. Let us, there's our admonition. Let us have grace, or some translations will say be gracious, whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For our God is a consuming fire. Wow. So let's receive the kingdom, and we have. We've received a kingdom that cannot be shaken or moved. The reason why that's important, especially to the congregation that the Hebrew writer is writing to, because that phrase is in contrast to the Old Testament physical temple that had been attacked and destroyed several times in history. He's pointing out, you know, the value of Christianity, the value of our faith is because, you know what, you came from, and we're going to get into this series next time, so much better. This kingdom can't be shaken, this New Testament kingdom, this church, it will not be defeated, it will not be overcome by anybody, it will not be overtaken by anything at any time, not then, not now, not in the future. The church is permanent, it's God's eternal purpose. So let us, because we've received a kingdom that cannot be shaken. Then he says, because of that phrase, or that foundation, that fundamental, this is the response that we need to give. Let's have grace. And as Christians, we live with that assurance. We need to be thankful for amazing grace, and we need to be gracious in return to God. And now he says, this is what your graciousness should look like. Number one, you serve God acceptably. That means according to his will. Serve God acceptably. Meaning that which is acceptable to him and not necessarily to us. Not our way. Not my favorite thing to do or not what I would like or enjoy or think is pleasurable. No, God, what is acceptable to you? That's my response to grace. The attitude of Jesus before the Father. John 4, verse 34. Jesus said, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me. To finish his work. The attitude of Jesus in John 5, verse 30, because I seek not my own will, but the will of the Father which has sent me. In John 6, verse 38, for I came down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him that sent me. See, the attitude of Jesus is, I'm going to serve my Father acceptably, meaning according to his will. What would my Father like, or what does my Father want me to do? In Luke 22, verse 42, he's in the garden. He says, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. But nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. So let us, in receiving this kingdom that cannot be shaken, let's serve God acceptably, meaning the way that he wants to be served. It's an attitude. Spiritual, religious attitude. You know, Jesus said in Matthew 7, 21, not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven. Religious world doesn't want to hear that. Because they want everyone who just said, oh, just take Jesus in your heart. And one man that I hear on the television ends every program with, if you answer that prayer, his exact phrase is, we believe that you are a Christian. Now go find yourself a good Bible church. He's a false prophet. Jesus said, not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. I can't ignore that, and I can't explain it away. We need to serve God acceptably, and I know we strive to do that. That's our admonition. That's what we encourage when we assemble together. And we say it so much, as the Hebrew writer said in chapter 10, and so much the more we say what I'm trying to present this evening. So much the more as you see the day approaching. And not only serve God acceptably, but with reverence is in the text. If you have reverence in your service for God, you'll have respect for what God wants. It means to hold in high regard, to honor, to hold God in awe. It's an attitude that says, God, I want to do it your way. And not only we serve God acceptably and with reverence, and then godly fear. Wow. You know what God can do to us? Not only the good side, but also the severity. Because that's in verse 29, the next verse. Our God's a consuming fire. I have godly fear. God's not to be trifled with. I know he's gracious. We just said in the same verse 28 before verse 29, that we have grace and graciousness. The Hebrew writer has illustrated that God's judgment with the Old Testament, with the Israelites, just a couple verses earlier in verse 25, same chapter. See that ye refuse not him that speaks, meaning God. For as they escaped not who refused him that spake on earth, much more shall not we escape if we turn away from him that speaks from heaven. Not escape. Hebrews 10:31, it's a fearful thing to fall in the hands of the living God. Wow. Fear God. Fear God. Romans 11, verse 22. I'm not sure if I put that one in your notes. But in Romans 11, verse 22, behold the goodness and the severity of God. I know people I just like to hear about, you know, the goodness of God, but the Bible, I don't want to just swing that pendulum only one way and talk about the severity of God, but when you come across in your reading of the Bible text about that attitude of God or that characteristic of God, I'm certainly not going to ignore it. I'm going to pass over the severity of God passages in the Bible. In 2 Corinthians 5, verse 11, it says, therefore, knowing the terror of the Lord, we persuade men. The terror of the Lord? That's one motivating factor. But also it's because we've received a kingdom that cannot be shaken. Let's be gracious and serve God acceptably with reverence, with fear, because God's a consuming fire. Wow. Number 12, and then we'll quit with this one. Number 12 point here, lesson. And then next week, Lord willing, we'll just give a summary and then we'll close this lesson out in this series. Chapter 13, verses 13 and 14. Let's go forth, therefore, unto him without the camp, meaning outside the city walls, outside the camp, outside the gates, bearing his reproach. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. So go forth outside the camp, or outside the gates. The meaning of that is, that illus, that visual. Go outside the gates in the city of Jerusalem. It means we're going to approach God through Jesus. And it is not in any way associated with the Old Testament temple and its sacrifices. That's the visual he's presenting. Within the walls are the temple. Outside the walls, well, that's the hill of Golgotha, the place of the skull where Jesus was crucified. Let's go outside the gate. And so he presents that visual. Even the place of Jesus' sacrifice, his crucifixion, is noted here as outside. He was sacrificed on the cross and not on the temple's altars of sacrifice, inside the walls, inside the gates. The place of Jesus' death is symbolizes a total break from the Old Testament way of worship. And so just that simple phrase, let's go to Jesus outside the gate, is that visual. Wait a minute, what about Jerusalem? What about this fine temple we have here? What about this whole Old Testament system of worship inside the gate? No, we go outside the gate. You leave all the Old Testament system. That's the symbolism of that phrase. Leave the security of Jerusalem. Leave the temple sacrifices. Leave all the Old Testament ways, and you take refuge in Jesus alone. That's the meaning of the phrase. Turn away from everything but Jesus for salvation. In verse 14, he says, For here we have no continuing city. Again, the illustration. You see this city right here, Jerusalem? Now, we have a kingdom that cannot be shaken. Don't look at the physical properties of the city. We seek one to come. See, Jerusalem was the focus of, has been the focus of worship for 2,500 years. Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. And it was in AD 70 by the Romans in just a matter of years from when this letter was written. So go to Jesus outside the gates. Don't put your trust in Jerusalem. Don't put your trust in the temple sacrifices. Don't put your trust in Old Testament ways of worship. And the contrast is, yeah, we seek for a city to come, not this one here, meaning heaven itself, our eternal rest. That's the lesson. So we'll continue here, like I say, Lord willing, next week. We finish up the lettuce verses in Hebrews. And again, what I want to do when this ends, we'll go through all the verses in the book of Hebrews that say something is better. And there's about 13 of those. The better things in the book of Hebrews, and I'll give you an outline on those. I haven't done these lessons up yet, so I'm looking forward to what I have to say. I can't wait to hear what I'm about to present. Always when we assemble together for worship, we sing a song of encouragement, song of invitation. Maybe one here or more this evening that's not a member of the New Testament church, meaning you've not been baptized for remission of sins. And that we can accomplish that this evening if that's your desire, if that's your resolve. You simply need to let that be known. So let's stand together if you're able and sing the song of Genesis, the lesson for us. If you need to respond or if that's your desire to respond in a public way, please do so while we're singing.